We hadden gevdaler amr aleph, fourth line. We talked about in the Mishnah about cases where we're not sure which woman is, of two sisters is whose wife. The last case we had several different permutations of it, and one of them was where you had two men to begin with, two unrelated men had been mekadesh two sisters without specifying, or actually we said they did specify originally which one was mekadesh to which one, but then there was confusion and we're not sure after all which one was mekadesh to which one. So now we said in terms of Yibum and Chalitza, if those men each have two brothers, then on each side you have one brother does on each side one brother does Chalitza to one brother does Chalitza to one of the women and the other does to another one to the other one to the other woman, and then of the and then from each side one of the brothers can marry one and each of the brothers can marry one of the women. And there's no problem because if she was his Yavama, then if she's his Yavama, then he's doing Yibum. And if not, then Chalitza has already been done, and therefore she's allowed to marry outside the family. So we said that, the last thing we said in the Mishnah was that if two brothers from one side did Chalitza, then the two from the other side should not do Yibum because maybe Chalitza was done validly or maybe not. So, you still need one from one side to do Chalitza. And we said Kodmu v'Kansu, if they went without asking Beis Din and they went and married these two women, then we don't force them to get divorced because each one has a valid reason to say that he's marrying his Yavama. Because after all, one of these women is a Yavama to them. We're just not sure which one. And therefore, that's not reason enough to force them to divorce. So the Gemara says, Toni Shila. So Shila taught a Braisa, Ba'afilu Shneim Koyanim. That halacha would apply even if the two brothers were Koyanim. So that means that one of them has married a Chalutza. Because after all, what did we have the case over here? There are two women. One of them is Mekodesh to one of them was Mekodesh to Reuben, and the other one to the unrelated Moshe. So looking at it from the perspective of Moshe's brothers, suppose that they were Kohenim. So now we said both of those women received Chalitza from Reuben's brothers. So after all, one of them, therefore is definitely a Chalitza. We just don't know which one. Nevertheless, if Moshe's brothers, as we have in the diagram of there, Aaron and Elazar, we're calling them, if they're Kohenim, nevertheless, we don't force them to divorce these women, even though it comes out that he's marrying a Chalutza. My time, a Chalutza, Derabanan, because the whole concept that a Kohen is not allowed to marry a Chalutza is only Derabanan. The Suffolk Chalutza, like Gazru Bahurabanan. Here, where it's only a Suffolk, then the Chachamim were not Gozer. Many of the Rishonim point out, and for example, Tosfos Chadmi Kamai on the side of the Amud over here points out that, only in a case like this, where we're saying that, they already married them, we're not going to force them to get divorced, but l'chatchila, we're not going to be allowing them, even though it's true a chalutza is only dirabanan, and each one of them is only a suffolk chalutza, we're not going to allow them the hafchila to do them and say, yeah, but it's only a suffolk dirabanan. Only when they're already married, b'diavad, then we'll allow them to stay married, because after all, each one can argue that the one that I married is not the chalutza, and if you want to force me to divorce her, then we need some proof of that. Also, for that matter, we have various cases throughout the Masechta where a woman needs chalutza because of some suffolk or other, and we say she's also to a Kohen. So Tosfos discusses that, for example, that there are cases where if we do that, where people are going to think that in general a chalutza is allowed to a Kohen. Over here, the fact is when we see these two men marrying these two women, people are not going to think that a chalutza is generally married to a Kohen. They're going to think, well, each one of them, as far as he knows, he's marrying the non-chalutza. I mean, she received chalitza, but it wasn't one of them. It wasn't a valid chalitza because we're talking about that Reuven's brothers did chalitza to her. Only one of them was mekudesh to Reuven. The other one was mekudesh to Moshe, and the chalitza from a chalitza from one of Reuven's brothers is of course meaningless to her. So people, that's not, so Tosfos says that's not going to lead people in general to think that a Kohen is allowed to marry a chalitza. They're going to say to themselves, of these two brothers of Moshe's, Aaron and Elazar, each one is firmly convinced that the woman he married is not in fact the chalitza. So in this case, again, as Tosfos Chad Mikamai says, we're not going to allow it l'chatchila, but for d'yeved, once they already married, we're not going to force them to divorce. So the Gemara asks for chalutza de rabbanon. You're telling me that a chalutza is also to a kohen only mid rabbanon. Well, Tanya, we learn in a brisa when the pasuk says that a kohen is not allowed to marry grusha, a divorced woman, only a grusha. You would know from that only a grusha. Chalutza minayin. How do we know also a chalutza? Tamid lema veisha. Therefore, the pasuk says veisha grusha. You have the extra word veisha over there because it says the pasuk begins isha zoyna v'chalala lo yikahu, that a kohen is not allowed to marry a woman who's a zoyna or a chalala, and then it continues veisha grusha meisha lo yikahu, and they're not allowed to marry a woman who's divorced from her husband. Now, they didn't have to say veisha; it could have just said zoyna v'chalala u grusha meisha lo yikahu. So therefore, the fact that it says veisha again shows us that a chalutza is also asur. So then, a chalutza is daraisa. And the answer is midrabanan, who in fact the issue of chalutza to a kohen is only midrabanan, ukra, asmachta ba'alma, who the pasuk is only an asmachta for that. Which, as we've learned before, what the Ritva says, that it doesn't just mean that Chachamim just searched and randomly found the pasuk. It means, morning Yaakov, it means that actually it means that Hashem, for whatever reason, decided not to make this an Isur Daraisa, but he left a hint in the pasuk over there available for the Chachamim to use should they want to make this Zera. And that's what they did. Okay. The Mishnah says, mitzvah begodol yabim. The proper way of doing the mitzvah is that the oldest should do yibum. The imkodam akotan, but if a younger brother went ahead and did the yibum, zocha, then he was zocha, meaning, in other words, that he has the wife, and also, as we're going to learn further on in the Masechta, or actually we're going to learn briefly further down in the Amud as well, he also gets the portion of the inheritance that his brother had gotten. So even though he should have left it for his older brother, the fact is he did yibum, and therefore he's zocha in that. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, we learn a Braisa. Where do we learn this from? So like this, the Pasuk says regarding Yibum, the Pasuk goes, let's read the whole Pasuk first, then we'll break it down phrase by phrase. Literally, you would translate it, that it will be, after Yibum was done, the firstborn whom she gives birth to, Yaakov Hashem Achav Ames, will stand in the name of his dead brother, so that his name is not erased from among the Jewish people. So put like that, it sounds like what the Pasuk is saying is, when Yibum is done, then the new child stands up in place of the dead brother, so that now the dead brother's name is not wiped out, so now he has a continuation in the form of a child that was born to his former wife and his brother. So now the Gemara, though, is going to douse in the phrases in the Pasuk differently. V'hoya ha-b'chor, when it says, and it will be the firstborn, that means mikansha mitzvah begodol l'yabim, that means that the proper way of doing the mitzvah is that the bechor, the oldest son, should be the one to be doing yibum. So in other words, Rashi says, we take those words, v'hoya ha-bechor, and attach them to the end of the previous pasuk. The previous pasuk says, v'kocha lo v'isha v'yibma, and then it's continuing, v'hoya ha-bechor, who should it be who's doing that? The bechor. Then, when it says Asher Teled, when it says that she will bear, that means Prat Ilonis Shein Yeledes. That means, so we're excluding an Ilonis. So if the Yavama was an Ilonis, which we learned about in the first Perek, that she's a woman who never matures, who never has a sign of physical maturity, and therefore is not going to be able to have children. So such a woman is not included in the whole, in all the dinim of Chalitza and Yibum, and therefore, in other words, if she's, So as a Yavama, she would be potter. There's no Zika. And we learned in the first Perek of Machloikas about what about, would her Tzara be potter as well. We said in the end, the halacha is that no. Then when the pasuk says Yochum al Shem Achiv, when it says he'll stand up in the place of his brother, so we thought when we talk about the simple meaning of the pasuk means that the child is going to stand up instead in the name of his brother. But the Gemara says no. What it means is lanachla, means as far as inheritance. Meaning, so if you had brothers Reuben, Shimon, Levi, etc., and Reuben and let's say Shimon died, so Reuben is doing Yibum with his wife. So now we're saying Reuben gets the portion of inheritance that would have gone to Shimon. After Omer L'Nachla, so you're saying that's what it means. Ein Ela L'Shem, how do you know that? Maybe it means as far as the name. Maybe it is referring to the baby, and it means Yosef, Koren, Ose, Yosef, Yochanan, Koren, Ose, Yochanan. Maybe it means that when the baby is born, then if the dead brother was named Yosef, then you have to name the baby Yosef. And if the dead brother was named Yochanan, then you have to name him Yochanan. How do we know that not? In that case, in fact, Tosfos says, then the whole pasuk would go more kipshute. Then you would learn the pasuk. V'hoya habachur, the first child that this Yivama bears after the Yivum, will be called by the name of the dead brother. So how do we know that not? So we have a Gzeirah Shavah that tells us otherwise. Nemakan Yokum al Shem Achiv. Here the Pasuk says he'll stand up on the name of his brother. V'nemalahalan al Shem Achayim Yikoru b'nachalosam. We find when Yaakov tells Yosef that his children, Ephraim and Manasseh, will be separate Shvatim of their own, and then he tells him, but any other children that you have will not be considered separate Shvatim, they'll be called by the name of their brothers within their Nachla. In other words, any other children that you have, they and their descendants will belong to either Shevet Manasseh or Shevet Ephraim. So ma shem ha'om lahalan nachla. So there, that's what it means. It means the name. In other words, they're going to be sharing in the nachla of Ephraim or the nachla of Manasseh. Af shem ha'om kan lanachla. The same way, the word shem over here refers to the nachla. So it means that the yavam. So the words v'hoya b'chur asher teled. So the word v'hoya b'chur does not refer to the firstborn son of the Yavama, that he's going to be named after the nest, but rather it means that the Bechor, the oldest son, who himself is going to be doing the Yibum, he will, Yochum al Shem Achav HaNes, he will take over the inheritance of his brother. And then when the pasuk finishes off, when it says his name will not be erased, meaning the dead brother, so that comes to exclude that if the dead brother was a Soris, then his name is already erased because he can't have children, so then there's no Yibum or Chalitza necessary with his wife. We're going to talk about it in more detail later in the Masechta. We talked about it briefly before. And then in the first parak, there's two different kinds of Soris. There's Sris Adam and Sris Chama. Sris Adam is where a person was sterilized or castrated by human hands, as, for example, the Goyim used to do to their royal servants and whatever. And then you have Sris Chama, where a person was born congenitally with some condition that makes it that he's going to be infertile. We'll learn in the eighth parak of our Masechta, we'll learn about simonim, about physical symptoms that show that the person is a Sris Chama. It's the male equivalent of an Ilonis, essentially. The same way as we said an Ilonis has certain physical symptoms that show that she's never going to reach physical maturity as far as Shtei Cyrus and as far as the other bodily synonym of physical maturity. The same way with the Swiss Chama, he also has certain symptoms that show that he's never going to reach that kind of maturity, and you have basically the same dinim applied to him. So we're saying the same way as if his wife is an Ilonis, we learn from Asher Tele that she's not subject to Chalitza or Yibum. The same way if the husband was a Swiss Chama, then his wife is not subject to Chalitza or Yibum. So that's how we douse in the pasuk phrase by phrase. Omar Rava, Afa Gav the Machala Torah Kula in Mikra Yotzi Midei Pshuto. So Rava says, you know, you should notice something unusual over here. Usually, throughout the rest of Shas, we always say that even though we douse in a pasuk, nevertheless, we still have to pay attention to the simple meaning of the pasuk. So in other words, we still apply the simple meaning of the pasuk in some way. We just say that Drasha teaches us additional dinim as well. One example of it is we had in the first perek when we were talking about the dinim over there of Masu Grushase, where a man remarries his wife after he divorced her and she married somebody else. So we mentioned we had the pasuk over there Achra Shehu Tamar, and we said that in Mikra Yotzim Midei Pshutei, and therefore we discussed that the Achra Shehu Tamar refers to her, as well as we darshan that also refers to a sota. And you have other examples of that. So usually in the Torah, that's what we say. Hocha, but over here, asoy gzeira shava, apiktim pshatei legamri. Here the gzeira shava comes and takes it completely out of the pshat. In other words, it's not necessary at all. You're not accomplishing anything particular by naming the baby who was born from Yibum after his dead uncle. So Rashi says, Rava had the Kabbalah from his Rebbeim, that it's so. So here, the Vahoya Bechor and Asher Teled and Yochum Hashem Achav Ames, we're using them completely for the Jerushas that we said, and we're saying there's no mitzvah at all to name the baby after the dead brother. By the way, I mean, so we're talking about on a pshat level and on a halacha level. Of course, you know, on a deeper level, the fact is that the Mephoshim on the Pesukim do explain, that yes, when the purpose of Yibum is that when the baby is born, he's going to be a Gilgal of the dead brother, and in that way he perpetuates what the dead brother should have been able to continue accomplishing in life and wasn't able to. So this is why we have, even before Matan Torah already, Yehuda is telling Oyn, his son Oynon, to go do Yibum with Er's wife, because already they knew already then of the advantage of this. So on that level, yes, it is in fact that the Habachor Asher Teled Yochum Hashem Ochav Ames refers to the baby, that he stands in place of the dead brother and he's a Gilgal. However, we're talking about here on a pshat level, and on a halacha level, then we don't say that, and we don't say that there's any necessity to name him after him. So the Gemara says, why do we need, so in that case, why do we need the Gzeira Shava? The Ilav Gzeira Shava, have Amina shame mamash. So what? And if it weren't for the Gzeira Shava from what Yaakov tells Yosef, you would have said that Yochum Hashem Ochav Ames means that he actually has to be named after the dead brother. How could that be? L'man Kamaz Rachmana. Who, after all, would the Torah be addressing with those words? L'yavam. Would it be addressing the Yavam? Then it shouldn't. Then the phrasing is wrong. Yochum Hashem Achicha Mibarlei. Then the expression should be that he will stand up on the name of your brother. Because after all, if we're speaking to the Yavam, so the pasuk should have said that you Yavam, when your new wife the Yavama has a baby, you should name him after your brother. E lebeidina, and if it's addressed to the Beis Din, telling the Beis Din that it's your job to name this baby, then Yochum Hashem Achi Oviv Mibarlei. Then it should say that he'll stand up in the name of his father's brother, because after all, that's what the dead brother is to the baby, is his father's brother. So the fact that it doesn't, the fact that the pasuk says Yochum Hashem Achiv Hames means it forces us to, so even without a Gzeira Shava, it's obvious that Achiv Hames means we're talking about the Yavam relative to his dead brother, and the Yavam already has a name, so therefore obviously we're not talking about renaming him. So therefore obviously even without a Gzeira Shava, we know we're not talking about a baby. So the Gemara says, why? So what? I have another possibility. Maybe what it is the Torah is addressing the Beis Din. It's telling the Beis Din, Imru le Yavam, you should inform the Yavam that Yochum Hashem Achiv, that when he has a baby with this Yavama, he should name him after his brother. So in that case, the words Yochum Hashem Achiv do fit very well. The Beis Din is telling Hashem is telling the Beis Din to in turn tell the Yavam that when the baby is born, make sure that he's named Al Shem Achiv Ames. So how do we know that not? Ella. So that is why we need the Gzeira Shava to completely take away that possibility, to say that there's no requirement at all and you're not accomplishing anything at all by naming the baby after the dead brother. Okay. So the Gemara says, Hashkad Amit Krob Godoksi. So okay, you're telling me that the words Vahoya Bechor in the Pasuk do not refer to the Bechor that the Yavama bears, but rather we're talking about the Bechor among the brothers who are up for Yibum. Well then, Ema B'chor Le Yabim, Pashat Le Yabim. So maybe, how do you know that it means that any of the brothers could do Yibum? Maybe the Torah is telling you, but Davka, it has to be the Bechor does Yibum. No other brother is able to do it. Like Mar says, can't be. In Ken, Eishes Ochim, Shalahay Bar Lomi, Dimiyat Rahmana, Lomali. In that case, we had at the beginning of the Perek, we had the Miut from the Pasuk that if there's Ochiv Shalahaya Bar Lomi, that if there's a brother newly born after the first brother passed away. So there are the examples we had at the beginning of the Perek where you had, for example, Reuben passed away, and then sometime after that Levi was born, and we had the details of the Machlokas of Shimon and the Chachamim about whether he was born before Shimon did Yibum or after Shimon did Yibum, etc. But the point is that he was born, that there's definitely cases we said over there where Reb Shimon, where even Reb Shimon agrees that the newly born brother is not, there's no zika, and he doesn't do chalitza or yibum. So now, if you're gonna tell me that in any case the Bechor has to do yibum, then there's no reason to even have then why would I even need a miut? For Eishes Achav Shalahir by Lamai, of necessity, that means that there were other brothers already who are older, and then this younger brother was born. So automatically, if we were to say Vahoya Bechor means that only the Bechor does Yibum, then all the other ones would be, and all the other ones were excluded, then automatically he'd be excluded on those grounds, because he's the youngest of the brothers. The fact that we're not saying that shows, the fact that we need a miut to tell us that he doesn't do Yibum, shows that other than that, he would have been able to do Yibum had he been born while his brother was still alive. But the Gemara says, Porich Rabachoi, but Rabachoi slugs that up, Rabacha actually, Porich Rabacha, there are a few places in Shas where Rabacha uses that expression, Porich. There's actually, in some places, Tosfos discusses that this Rabacha may be actually one of the Rabbanon Tzvaroi, or even actually, and there are some places where Tosfos says it might be Rabachoi Goin, the author of Shiltos, although that's a little hard to say because he was long after the Gemara was over, so it seems that maybe the word Shiltos over there in Tosfos is a copyist mistake. But anyway, Tosfos says that this Rabbi Achoy, or Rabbi Acha, may have been one of the Rabbanon Tzvaroi, and therefore he uses an unusual expression. We find this expression, Porich, only with him. Anyway. So, Porich Rabbi Achoy, the Eimel Ma'utik Bukhra De'ima. So, okay, maybe you could say differently. Maybe you could say that when do we have the miut of Eishes Achiv Shalahay by Lamai is where this newly born child is a bechor of his mother. So in other words, let's say for example, so their father, for example, had been married to a woman and had several children with her. Then after the oldest brother Reuben passed away, then their father married another woman and had a child with her. So that child is a Bechor to his mother, but he was born after Reuben passed away. Maybe that's what, so he is a Bechor after all. So therefore, maybe that's what the Torah is saying, that therefore, he would have had a mitzvah of doing Yibum being the Bechor from his mother's side. However, for example, you see, subject to Pidyon, for example, he has to have Pidyon Aben because he's his mother's Bechor. On the other hand, because it's Achim Shalahir by Lomai, therefore he doesn't. So how do you know that's not what the pasuk is talking about? So the answer is Ahulay Matzis Amrit. You can't say that. Yibum Benachla Tala Rachmana. Because after all, as we've learned before, the Torah makes Yibum dependent on Nachla. The Torah ties them together. Yokum Hashem Achiv Ameis, we said, means that he gets the brother's Nachla. And the Nachla Mina Av, Volei Mina Ein. Nachla comes from the father, not from the mother. Brothers from the same mother inherit her, but other brothers do not. So you can't say therefore that just because this newly born brother is a bechor from the mother, that therefore we should think that there would be anything more about him doing Yibum than anything else. So in other words, so when we say a bechor, when we say that the bechor does yibum, we mean the bechor who gets a double portion. The bechor of a mother doesn't get a double portion. Well, again, we're back to, since the Torah tells us that achiv shalaishes achiv shalahay ba'olamai, there's no chalitza or yibum, that implies that otherwise, if he had been ba'olamai, even though he's a younger brother, he could conceivably have done yibum. Okay, so the Gemara says ve'ema, so maybe learn differently. Ki ika b'chor to sky mitzvah yibum. Maybe the Torah is telling you that it does after all mean the b'chor. So it's saying if the b'chor is available, then there's yibum to be done. Fine, it doesn't have to be the b'chor in that case because we excluded that. Because on the basis of the fact that there exists the concept of Eishes Achiv Shalahir by Lomari. So fine, we would say like this. Let's say, so you had a bunch of brothers, Reuven is the Bechor, so let's say if Shimon or Levi or Yehuda died and Reuven is still around, then we're saying that not only he, but any of the other brothers who were alive at the time the brother died could do Yibum. But, Ki Lecha Bechor Loit Eskayim Mitzvahs Yibum, maybe the Pasuk is implying that if the Bechor himself has already died, then there's no Yibum at all. So if Reuven already died, whether childless or not, for our purposes, doesn't matter, then we would say there's no Yibum at all with Shimon's wife or Levi's wife, etc. How do you know that not? The answer is no, because Amakro, Meis Achad Mehem, the Pasuk says one of them dies. Mila Yaskin and the Miss Bechor. And that could equally well be that when it says one of them dies, and in fact it could even be, Rashi says, That it means there may have only been two brothers to begin with, and one of them died, and the one that died could equally well be the Bechor. And the Torah is still saying that the Katan, even though he's obviously not a Bechor, should do Yibum. So he had only two brothers, Reuven and Shimon, and Reuven died, the Pasuk is still implying that Shimon has to do Yibum. So obviously we can't say that the Pasuk should be telling us that if the Bechor is gone, then there's no Yibum at all, because that's clearly not what the Pasuk is telling us. Okay, the Gemara says, the Eben de Mis Katan of Omar Achman al Yabim Bechor, maybe the other way around. Maybe the Pasuk is talking about specifically the case where the younger brother died. You would have to say that's what the Pasuk is talking about, specifically where the younger brother died, and the Torah is saying that the Bechor should do Yibum, because after all it says Bahoya Bechor. How do we know that it's the other way around? And the answer is, as we said before, Hamiyat Rahmana, Eishes Achiv Shalahir Bar Lamai. We already excluded Eishes Achiv Shalahir Bar Lamai, so that shows, as we said before, that it means that he's not subject to Yibum only on the grounds that Loihoi by Lamai. And again, it means also you could have where there were two brothers and the second one was born only after the first one died, and then we're saying that he's Potter only on the grounds that he wasn't by Lamai, implying that otherwise he would have been Chayev. Okay, so the Gemara asks, the Ema, let's try another possibility. How do we know? Maybe the Pasuk is saying, Ki leka b'chur, if there's no b'chur around, if Reuven himself has died, kodem katan zacha, then we would apply the din of our Mishnah that if the katan, if one of the younger brothers went ahead and did the yibum, then he was zacha. But v'i'ika b'chur kodem katan loy zacha. But we would say that if b'chur is around, then the katan cannot jump the line and not be zacha in the wife or in the nachla or anything. Because after all, the whole thing that we're saying that the younger brother could do it, and we're learning only from Umeis Achad Mehem and from the fact that you have Eishes Achiv Shalahir by Lamai. So therefore, still the Pasuk could be talking about where. So then the Pasuk could be saying that when you have that Umeis Achad Mehem, when one of them, which includes the Bechor, died, and now when you have, suppose that the only other brother is Achiv Shalahir by Lamai, then we're saying there's no Yibum, implying that otherwise there would be. But maybe we would say if the Bechor is still around, then he has exclusive rights on Yibum, and none of the other brothers can do it at all. The answer is no. Omakura ki yeshu achim yachtav, because the Pasuk says, when brothers live together. Therefore, hukshi yeshivas achim zelazeh, so the Pasuk is making a hekesh among the dwelling of all the brothers, in the sense, in other words, that in a certain sense, all the brothers are equal in terms of the fact that they can all do Yibum. So it's not reserved exclusively for the Bechor. Okay. So the Gemara says still, maybe another possibility. The Ema ki ikka Bechor lahadar agadol. Maybe what we should say is when there's a Bechor, then we have to go to him. So then we have to return to him to make him do Yibum. Meaning we're going to learn later on in the Masechta that what we're saying in our Mishnah that mitzvah begadol layabim. So now suppose that, So suppose that he doesn't want to do Yibum or Chalitza. So then we go around to the other brothers from oldest to youngest and see which one of them is willing to do Chalitza or Yibum. If none of them are willing to, then we go back to the Gadol, we go back to the Bechur, and we force him to do either Chalitza or Yibum, because we tell him, look, the mitzvah is incumbent on you. So maybe the Ema ki ikka b'chor lahadir agadol, maybe what the Pasuk is saying is, when there's a b'chor, then we eventually return, then we return to him and tell him, you got to do one or the other, you can't just leave her hanging. Ki leka b'chor ein chorzim in etzagadol, but maybe we would say that still the fact that the Torah uses the word v'hoya b'chor makes it that therefore if there's no b'chor, then we don't go back to the gadol, then we don't go in age order, then it's just indiscriminately whichever one of them wants to do it can do it, and we don't force any one of them. Alama toni abayek shisha, but the fact is we see that abayek shisha tora b'naisa, shisha means the elder one, so this is not the regular abaya and shas, this is an elder a murder of a previous generation. I think in some places we find him as a Talmud of Rav, so that makes him about a generation before the regular Abaya. Anyway, he taught the following braisa. Mitzvah begodol leyavim. The ideal mitzvah is that the godol, that the oldest brother should do yivim. Loy rotza, if he doesn't want, helchem etzel elchad akotin, then they go to his younger brothers. Loy rotza, and if the younger brothers don't want, chozun etzel godol, then we go back to the eldest one and we tell them, look, it's your mitzvah, you gotta do chalitza or yivim. But since we're, but maybe we would be saying that there's a, that we, so, and when we say Ochiv HaKotan, it implies that he's the next younger brother, but he's older, that he's next younger brother, but he's older than all the brothers after him. So we see that we're still trying to look for the eldest one to do it. And then we say, so we could say, when we say Chorzun Etzel Gadol, so okay, you could say Gadol means the Bechor. But the fact is, we see that now, so Rashi explains, there's a Mishnah later in the fourth parak that tells us this basic concept. But it doesn't actually say, we don't see clearly from the Mishnah over there that we go down the brothers in age order. From Abaya Kshisha's Braisa, we see that we do. So now, why would we say that we go to, why would we say we go to the brothers in age order? If maybe we would say that only if there's a bechor do we eventually return to him and tell him, look, you have a mitzvah, you got to do chalitza or yivum. But if not, then there's no particular age order in it. So how do we know that not? So the answer is kibachur. The answer is we answer that once we establish that yivum can be done by other brothers, then we say in that sense they're like a bechor. Ma bechor becharosa gormaloi, just like the bechor. The fact that he's the eldest is what causes him to have the primary mitzvah. The same way with each of the other brothers, the fact that he's older than the next older brother, that makes it that he's further up in line and he's the next one to ask. So that's what, in that sense, we're comparing him to a bechor, but not to say we already established that it's not only the bechor, that the other boys can do yibum as well. And now we're saying the result of that is, therefore, that we compare them to a bechor, and therefore each one, the fact that he's older, puts him in a higher place in line, where therefore he's the next one. If the actual bechor doesn't want to do it or is unavailable or whatever, then we go to the next one and we go down them in age order. Okay, so the Gemara says here's another possibility: the aim of kimiyabim bechor lishkol nachla. Maybe you should say like this. Maybe after all, the pasuk does use the words v'hoya b'chur, so maybe it implies that only if the b'chur does yibum does he get the nachla of his brother. Ki miyabim pashut lo lishkol nachla. Maybe the Torah is implying that if a non-b'chur does yibum, and we establish that he could do yibum, fine, but maybe it means that he doesn't get the nachla of his dead brother. And the fact that we said ki yeshu achim yachdav, Marashah explained, that doesn't contradict this, because we would say that's talking about, as far as the yibum, there's no difference between brothers. But as far as things that come out of the yibum, for example, the nachla, maybe not. So how do we know they're not? The answer is, omakura yokum ashem achi. Because the pasuk says he'll stand up in the name of his brother, barikom. The fact is, this younger brother, whichever one it is, he did do yibum, he did stand up in place of his dead brother and marry the yibama. Therefore, he has to get the nachla. Okay. So in other words, in short, what we're saying is the word bechur over here does not mean does not mean to limit yibum or any of the benefits of yibum to the bechur. They apply equally well to the other brothers. All we're saying is the bechur has the mitzvah liyabim, but that's true not only of the bechur, that's true of each of the other brothers. Each of the other brothers, in age order, they have the mitzvah. Only if none of them are willing to do it, only then do we go back to the bechur and force it. Well, then the Gemara says, "Ve'ela bechur dekayi rachmana l'may hilsa." Then, in that sense, if we're saying ultimately that any of the brothers could do yibum, then why does the Torah even use the word bechur at all? Why does it call him a bechur? It should say gadol. And the answer is legri usa. The answer is, on the contrary, the Torah is telling us that the Torah is calling him a bechur in the sense that to his detriment, meaning that yes, he does get the nachla, but ma bechur einin noto b'roi k'v'muchsa. When it comes to a bechur, a regular bechur, when he's inheriting from his, when he's inheriting his father's yerusha, he does not get a double portion of roi like he does from muchsa. Roi means property that his father has, that his father doesn't yet have, but is eventually going to come to him. So you could have, for example, it would include things, for example, like loans that haven't been paid off yet to him. It would include things like, for example, if the father himself has relatives that he stands to inherit from, but those relatives hadn't passed away yet by the time the father did. So all those kinds of things are called roi. So the Gemara in Baba Basra explains that Rashi brings the pasuk over here that the bechur gets a double portion only from what's muchzek, only from what's in the chazaka of the father at the time that he passes away, but not from roi, not from possessions and property that is roi that eventually is going to come to him, that the bechur doesn't get a double portion of. So the same way over here, then, it means that so Rashi says the same way, it means that when the Yavam is getting a double portion, he's getting, after all, his own portion and his brother's portion, he doesn't get from Roy like he would from Mursa. Now that's how Rashi explains. So let's finish the Gemara. So just like a Bechor doesn't, the same way the Yavam does not get a double portion, does not get the double portion within of Roy only from Mursa. So in that sense, he's like a Bechor. So now Rashi explains that we're talking about specifically that anything that he's inheriting, then he's only inheriting a double portion. He's only inheriting his and his brother's portion only from what's Rory, not from what's Mukta. Which means, in other words, that according to Rashi, it doesn't matter whether in this case the father was still alive at the time when all of this happens or not. Either way, we're saying that he does inherit his brother's portion. He just doesn't inherit a double portion of Roy. On the other hand, Agrois HaGro brings over here that Rabbeinu Hanano, and actually it's not just Rabbeinu Hanano, many other Rishonim learn this way also, that no, what it means is this whole concept of the Yavam inheriting the property of his dead brother, that only applies if by the time all of this happened, their father had already passed away, and therefore they're all in line to inherit his possession. But if at the time the yibum takes place, their father is still alive, then he doesn't get his brother's portion at all, because in that sense we say the brother's whole portion is roi, because it's still everything still belongs to the father. In any case, the Gemara is saying that the fact that we're comparing the yavam to a bechur means just that, means that the rules of inheritance of a bechur apply to him. So according to Rashi, again, it means even if the father is alive, and according to Rabbi Nachmanu and so forth, it means that only if the father is dead, is he getting his brother's portion anyway. Okay. The Mishnah says, now this Mishnah is not really directly connected to this Mishnah and also the following Mishnah. Actually, all the Mishnayos from here until the end of the Perek, are not really directly connected to the topic of Yibum. But two Mishnayos ago on Chavdei, when we had the case of, we started with the case of a man with Makadish two women, and we're not sure which one he was Makadish, or two men were Makadish two women, and we're not sure which one they were Makadish, etc., where we talked about cases where we're going to allow, we have cases where if Yibum was done, we're going to allow the Yevamim to stay married to the Yevamis and not force them to divorce. So therefore, our Mishnah and the following Mishnah has to talk about other cases where even though a marriage was done in a questionable way, but nevertheless, the Yevid, we don't force them to get divorced. So the Mishnah says, Hanitan ala shifcha, if a person was claimed about regarding a shifcha, meaning that there's rumors going around that he was mezana with the shifcha, v'nishtachra, and then afterwards she was freed. So once she's freed, she's considered a full bat Yisrael. So now in principle he'd be able to marry her. Oy alay vedes kechavim nisgayra, or where there's rumors going around that he was mezana with a certain goita, and then she was nisgayer, hareza lo yichnos. He should not marry her because of the laws, because it's going to strengthen the laws. People are going to say, you know what? The original rumor was true. He must have been mezana with her, and that's why now when he has an opportunity that he's marrying her. The imkonas emetzi in the other, but if he does marry her, then we don't force them to get divorced because the fact of the matter is she is a Jewish woman now and he's allowed to marry her. On the other hand, hanitam al eshes ish. On the other hand, if the rumor was regarding an eshes ish that he was mezana with her, and Beistin forced her and her Beistin forced her husband to divorce her, and then this guy who the rumor was going around marries her, then afapi should konas yotzi, even if he already married her, we force him to divorce her as well, because that issur is daraisa, because we have the concept the kashem shasur labal kahasur laboy. When a woman is mezana, just as she becomes also to her husband, so also she becomes also to the one that she was mezana with. So therefore, she's also to him, and therefore, Beistin will force them to get divorced. So the Gemara says, "Hagiyodas miyahavya." Now, the implication of the Mishnah is, in the case of the shikha that was freed, or this goiter who converted, so the implication is, the conversion was valid. So even though it seems that she converted in order to marry this guy, it seems it's a valid conversion. We're just saying that he shouldn't marry her because it'll strengthen the original lie. The problem with that is, or a mini, I have a contradiction. A braisa says, echad ishin is gayer l'shum isha, whether a man is converting in order to marry a certain Jewish woman, the echad ishin is gayer l'shum ish, or a woman converts in order to marry a man, the chen ishin is gayer l'shum shulchan malachim, or if a person is converting in order to enjoy the tables of the kings, as the Gemara is going to say soon, for example, let's say in the times of David and Shlomo, because you're talking in a time when the Jewish people are rich and powerful, and he wants to join in that, or L'shum Avdei Shlomo, or he's converting in order to become one of the servants of Shlomo, where also they were important, they were pretty important, because Shlomo was very rich. So his servants also, we learned at the end of the first parak that they eventually went and settled the city of Tadmor, and so if a person is converting for those reasons, Einan Gerim, such people are not considered Gerim, Divrei Nechemya. Shahoy Reb Nechemya Oimer, Reb Nechemya used to say, here's a rule, Echad Geirei Arayas, whether you're talking about Geirim of lions, so the classic example of that is the Kusim, where after the Kusim were imported into Eretz Yisrael by Sancheirev, after the Aseret HaShavatim were taken into Golos, and Sancheirev brought Goyim from Kusa and various other places and settled them over there, so they were worshipping Avodah Zarah, and then lions came and attacked them, and they were afraid, and because of that, they converted to Judaism. Because they decided that the Goyish notion in those days was that every country has their God, and therefore they figured now that we're in the country of the God of the Jews, then we have to worship him. So Nehemiah says that that's not considered valid Geus. Actually, Tosfos points out that it's not like Rashi. We're not necessarily talking about the Kusim, because the Kusim is a special case, because after all, the Pasuk goes on to say that they continued to worship their gods as well, that they started worshiping Hashem and then combining that with worship of their idols. So then we would say, so that there's machoikos throughout Shas, whether the Kusim are Geire Arayas or Geire Emes. If we say they're Geire Arayas, then it would mean, in other words, it's not only that the motivation was wrong because they did it because of fear of the lion, but also because they actually continued to worship their Avodah Zarah. Here we'd be talking about where there's not. They're not continuing to worship their Avodah Zarah. They are behaving as a Jew should, but their motivation was because of lying. So Nehemiah says that's still no good. The Echad Geir Chaloimus, or Geir because of a dream. So let's say a Goy had a dream and was told in the dream to become a Geir. The Echad Geir Mordechai the Esther, or the Geirim of the times of Mordechai and Esther, where you find in the Megillah, the Rabbin Me'ameh Aret Nisyadim, where the Pasuk says that after the new letters that Mordechai sent out were published throughout the empire, the Jewish people have the right to defend themselves, and the king's army has to help them defend themselves. So the Pasuk says, Rabbin Me'ameh Aret Nisyadim, many of the peoples of the land were Nisyadim, which means that they were becoming Geirim. So Rav Nehemiah says, Einan Geirim. None of those are valid Geirim. Ad sheis garu bizman hazeh. Unless they become Geirim nowadays. So the Gemara says, bizman hazeh, so what do you mean nowadays? These, we're talking about these people who lived hundreds of years ago. And the fact is, we know that there were valid Geirim in earlier times as well. Rashi brings an example of Nebuzaradan, Nebuchadnezzar's general, where you have the story the Gemara tells in a couple of places, where when he destroyed the Beis Hamikdash and killed hundreds of thousands of Jews, but afterwards he had a hero tshuva and realized Hashem is going to punish him for that, and so he became a Geir. So obviously we can accept Geirim in earlier times as well. Ela, Ema kibizman hazeh. Rather, what Rav Nehemiah means is, when it's like nowadays, in other words, nowadays, when the Jewish people are not rich and successful and powerful and so forth, so if a ger comes, then that's fine, but not if he comes with one of these kinds of no good motivation. So that being the case then, so according to Rav Nehemiah, then we started by saying that if he's becoming a ger, l'shem ish, l'shum isha, or l'shum ish, then it's not a valid geirus. So applying that to our Mishnah, if you have then let's focus on the goita, where a goita became a geirus, and we're saying previously there were rumors that she was mezana with a Jewish man, and now we're saying that, so now we're saying she's misgayer, it's highly likely that she's misgayer in order to marry him. So according to the Nehemiah, that's not even a valid geirus. So not only he wouldn't be allowed to marry her, neither would any other yid. The answer is ha'itmar Allah. Well, you know that there was said about that, that that's only one opinion. But Omer Rav Yitzchak Bar Shmuel Bar Maut Mishmei Derav, halacha kedivra oimer kulam gerim him. No, the halacha is not like Rav Nehemiah. The halacha is like the Chachamim, who say that all of those are valid geirus. So the Chachamim agree you shouldn't accept geirim for such reason. But if they were nisgayer, then they are considered valid geirim. So applying that over here, that would mean that this goita who converted, so fine, she is mutter lahalacha to any other Jew. Even really, she would have been mutter to this guy were it not. Well, that's the question. Then in that case, why are we saying that only b'diyeved, if he married her, does he not have to divorce her? We should say lahatchila, he should be allowed to marry her. In other words, Tosfos touches out the question. If you say that she's not a real geirus, then like Rav Nehemiah says, then he shouldn't be marrying her lachachila because it's only a suffix whether she's a geirus. Because after all, we don't know whether she converted in order to marry him or not. So what we should say is, don't allow her to marry him, because then that makes it much more likely that she converted in order to marry him, and that would mean that to begin with her conversion was no good. So therefore, let her marry somebody else, where therefore there's less reason to say then that she converted in order to marry this guy, since she's not marrying him anyway. But once we're saying that the halacha is not like that anyway, that even though to begin with her motives were no good, nevertheless, the Dieben, once based in, accepted her as a geirus, then she's a valid geirus, then why can't she marry this guy just as much as she could marry any other kid? The answer is Mishum de Rav Asi, based on what Rav Asi says. To Omer Rav Asi says, here we apply the pasuk, Hoser mimcha ikshus teh, remove from yourself crookedness of mouth, ulazus fasayim agamer, and looseness of lips. In other words, act in a way that will take away chashad from you. Like this, there's a chashad, there's been a rumor going around that you were mezana with this woman. So then, don't strengthen that by going and marrying her where people are going to say, aha, see, it was right after all. So instead, so that's why the hachila, we shouldn't allow it. But the other, if he married her, then fine. The hosim al chah ikhshus peh is not a strong enough reason to force them to get divorced. In fact, Maharsha points out the word ikshus teh, ikshus literally means crooked. So we're talking about even if he knows for a fact that the rumor is not true, but nevertheless, because the rumor is going around, he should still not strengthen it by marrying her. If he did, then we'll allow them to stay married. But l'chachila not. Tosfos also points out that this is only talking about when we're talking about over here that there was a rumor that he was mezaneh with a goyte. If we're talking about that there's a rumor that he was mezaneh with an unmarried Jewish woman, then there's no problem of hosin and chal ikshus teh. Then by all means, let him go marry her. Adrabba, we find by the Torah, talks about that when a man rapes an unmarried girl, naira b'sula, who's not moirasa, then he has a mitzvah to marry her. So that would be the same thing over here. Okay, so since we're talking about gerim, let's talk about that a little bit. Tana Rabbanan, ein mekablim gerim l'moisa Mashiach. We're not going to accept gerim in the times of Mashiach, because we said before that we're not allowed to accept gerim. Reb Nechemiah said that even b'diavad they're not gerim when they're coming for shulchan melachim, for the table of kings. The chachamim disagree and say they are b'diavad valid gerim, but nevertheless, on chila, we don't want to accept them, because then the Jewish people are going to be successful, and then kolam adonim tzuyim ka'afer and so forth, and therefore it's highly likely that a goy who comes then is going to be coming for the sake of that rather than l'shem shemayim. Kayotzibo is similarly like kibul gerim lo b'mei David v'lo b'mei Shlomo. For the same reason, they did not accept gerim in the times of David or Shlomo. For the same reason, because it's likely that it's far more likely that they would have been coming for the prestige and everything that came with being a Jew at that time, rather than for sincere reasons. Now, the Gemara does mention later on in the Masechta that there were people who were nisgayer in those times. However, that's what we're saying is, in other words, that there were ad hoc bate dinim of not such great Talmid Chachamim who accepted them as gerim. We're going to have the story later on in the eighth perek where there were a bunch of goyim very impressed by the way the Jews treated gerim, and therefore many of them became gerim themselves. But since it was in the times of David, then the reputable bate dinim wouldn't have accepted these people, but there were other bate dinim who accepted them maybe not knowing better or whatever. So therefore, once they're nisgayer, but we're saying l'chachila you shouldn't do that. So Omer Rabbi Yezer, Rabbi Lazer, Maikra, where's a pasuk where we see this concept that gerim have to be coming for sincere reasons? The pasuk says Hein Gur Yogur Efes Meosi Migar Ita Halayich Yipo. So the simple meaning of the pasuk is something like the Gur Yogur means to be afraid, and the Gur later in the pasuk means to fight. So the simple meaning of the pasuk Rashi explains over there in Yeshaya means something like you know who should be afraid is the ones who don't have me. Efes me'osi you. Efes means nothing. So they have nothing of me. For example, the Adonim, the Amalekim, who don't believe in Hashem at all, they're the ones who should be afraid. And the Gor Ita Halayich Yipo, anybody who tried to fight against you will fall in front of you. However, the Gemara is darshining it over here differently, that all three words, Gur, Yogur, and Gur, are all referring to Galen. Hein Gur Yogur, which is the one who is a valid Ger, which is the one who's worthy of becoming a Ger. Efes Meosi is the one who does that when I am not with you. In other words, Bizman Azeh, when we don't see, when Alakos is hidden in the world and there's Hester upon him and we don't see openly that Hashem is leading us. So then if a person wants to become a Ger during that time, by all means. And then the pasuk continues, Mi Gor Itach, whoever lived with you as a Ger during the time when you Jewish people were persecuted and oppressed and poor and so forth, Alayach Yippo, he will continue to live with you. Yippo means he'll rest together with you, like Alpnei Kalechav Nafal, and he will continue to rest with you and to live with you when things are good, when Mashiach comes. Implying Aval Idach Loid, but implying that otherwise, if they become gerim during the times when the Jewish people are rich and prosperous, then not. Okay. The Mishnah continued. Hanitan al Eishes Ishkola. We said that if there were rumors going around that a certain man was mezaneh with an Eishes Ish, and then we said that Beis Din had forced the husband to divorce her, then if this rumored boyle marries her, then we force him to divorce as well. So the Gemara says, Amar Rab over Eidim. The Rav says, we're not just talking about where there was a rumor, we're talking about where there were Edim eventually who actually saw her being Mezana with him. So originally when the husband divorced, it was because of a rumor, but now later on Edim came to back up the rumor. However, the Gemara says, Omer of Sheshes, Amina, I would have to say, Kinayim v'shochiv Rav omolohai shmaifsa. Rav must have said this when he was about to fall asleep. In other words, Rav Sheshes is saying, this cannot possibly be correct. There's a truma from the Chavis Yorer where he deals with the fact that sometimes we find in the Gemara, we find some of the Amoraim using very harsh expressions of one against the other, and he explains a bunch of them. So he says with this one, First of all, he says Rav himself. We learned earlier in the Masechta, we said that his girsa was that Rav had said to Levi, about a certain thing that Levi had said. He said, it seems like you don't have any brains in your head that you could say such a thing. So the Chavis Yorer says, maybe in fact that's why Rav now has a derogatory statement made about him in turn. But he says that after all, Rav Sheshes is a Talmud of Rav. It may not be so much derogatory as Rav Sheshes is saying, this is so obviously wrong that Rav never could have said this if he was fully alert. It must be that he was half asleep, because that's the only time he could have said something like that that doesn't make sense. What's the problem, says Rav Sheshes? Netanya, we learn in a Braisa. Hanitan al Eshes Ish. If there were rumors about a certain man in Eshes Ish, it says on the side, and the husband divorced her because of him, and then let's say she went and married somebody else. So originally she was married to Reuven. While she was married to Reuven, there were rumors going around that she was Mizana with Avraham. So now Reuven divorced her. So now instead of marrying Avraham, she went and married Moshe. And then later on Moshe divorced her. Im konas lo yodzi. So then we're saying that now, if the suspected boil, Avraham, were to go and marry her, then he doesn't have to divorce her. So we have to figure out, hey, kidomi. So says Rav Sheshes, what's the scenario? E de'ika edim. If there are edim that substantiate that Avraham was mezana with her back when she was married to Reuven. So what's the difference? So what if she married somebody else in between and that caused the rumors to die down? It's not just a matter of rumors anymore. It's a matter of there were actual edim that she was mezana with this guy when she was married to her first husband. Ella loved lecha edim. So obviously we have to be talking about when there are no edim. The time of the osa achava afsike lakola, so only because she married somebody else in between and that broke up the curl, then we say that she doesn't, that we don't force her to divorce Avraham when she marries him. Halav hachi mapkinan, implying that otherwise, if there hadn't been somebody in between, if directly after divorcing Reuven she had married Avraham, then we would force her to divorce him. So that's not like Rav says, that we're talking about only when they were aiding. So the answer is Omalach Rav. No, so Rav can answer that Braisa is not a contradiction to me, and you don't have to say that what I said was when I was half asleep. No, Hu Adin de Afagav de Leosa Achav Achseke Lekola. As a matter of fact, the din would apply equally well whether she married somebody else in between or not. Ike Edim Machinon. Only if there were Edim for the original Znus, only then do we force her to get divorced. Ileka Edim Loi Machinon. If there were no Edim and the whole thing is only based on rumors, then we don't force her to get divorced. But Hakikama, the Braisa is saying, even though in between she married somebody else, and you would say, well, in that case, then that means that the original rumors must not have been true, because if so, if they were true, why is she going and marrying somebody else rather than the guy that she's already been mezana with? Nevertheless, still, v'chatzchila, he shouldn't be marrying her even after that. So even though she was married to Reuven, and then divorced, and then married to Moshe, and then divorced, nevertheless, even though it's only rumors that she was ever mezana with Avraham, nevertheless, v'chatzchila, she shouldn't marry Avraham. Only b'diavad, if she did, then we would allow them to stay married. But if there were edim, then Rav says it would be different. So therefore, so Rav says, in other words, that the Braisa is not a contradiction to him, because the Mishnah, when it says Af Pisha Konas Yotzi, is talking about when there were Edim, and the Braisa is talking about when there were no Edim. So the Gemara says, Bamed Varma, Mesvi, I have a contradiction. A braisa says, when is all the supplying that we force him to get divorced, or to get divorced, only if she doesn't have children from her first husband? Avo yesh labonim, but if she has children with her first husband, loy teitze, then we're not going to force her to divorce the second guy, because the problem is, if we force them to get divorced, then that strengthens the original coil that she was, in fact, mezana. And the problem is, then people are going to think that her children from her first husband are mamzerim. And the braisa continues, being bo ege truma, if, on the other hand, edim came that say that she was tamei, that she was, in fact, mezana with this guy, afilu yesh la kama bonim teitze, then even if she has many children from her first husband, then she has to, then we force her and her second husband to get divorced. So we see that, so we see that when there's no children, even without edim, is reason enough to get them to force them to divorce. So that would be like Rav Sheshes, but not like Rav. The answer is Rav Muki Lo Masnisin V'Yesh La Bonim V'Yesh La Edim. The answer is Rav would have to say that our Mishnah is talking about where there are children, but there's also Edim. So only because there's Edim are we forcing them to get divorced. Had there not been Edim, the fact that she has children with her first husband and we don't want to be Motzi Laz on them would be reason enough to not force them to divorce. So the Gemara says, "My Duchke the Rav Muki Lo Masnisin V'Yesh La Bonim V'Yesh La Edim." So why is Rav forced to understand that our Mishnah is talking about when she has children with her first husband, but on the other, so that would be a reason for them not to divorce, for her and her second husband not to divorce. But on the other hand, there are edim that she was mezana while she was married to her first husband, and that would be a reason to override that and say, nevertheless, we're not worried about the children, we still force them to get divorced. Why does Rav have to explain the Mishnah that way? The timer, the ikka edim makkinan, and we're saying only because there were edim are we forcing them to get divorced, the leka edim loy makkinan, and had there not been edim, then we wouldn't force them to, because we don't want to be moitzi laz on the children. Loik mabashayim labonim, afagab the leka edim. Why doesn't Rav say more simply? We're talking about there's no edim, but she also has no children from her first husband, so there's no children to worry about a laz on them. Therefore, we're saying edim or not, a rumor is enough to say that her first husband, that once her first husband divorced her, we don't want her to marry this guy that she was suspected of being a zana with, because maybe the rumor is true. So why doesn't Rav understand the Mishnah that way? What forces him to say that there were edim, and then that forces him to say in turn that there are children? The reason is because Rav otherwise found the wording of the Mishnah would be hard to understand. My iri the tani hoitzi uha, because the expression in the Mishnah is hoitzi uha, which means that based in forced the husband to divorce her. Listeni hoitzia. The Mishnah could have instead said hoitzia, that he divorced her, implying even voluntarily. Ela kol hoitzi uha bebeistin. When we use the word hoitzi uha, implies that it's being done by beistin. Or beistin, the edim hu demafi. Beistin is only going to force them to get divorced only if there were edim about the original znus. She's not going to become usur to her husband because of a rumor. So therefore, that forces Rav to say, because it said hoitziyua, necessarily means that there were edim. Only because there were edim to the original znus, are we forcing her to divorce her second husband if her second husband was that same guy that the scenario would be there were rumors going around, and oh, not just rumors, but actual edim that she was mezana with this guy. So now we're saying that her husband based in forces her husband to divorce her. Now, if she goes and marries this boyle, then it doesn't even matter if she has children with her first husband. Nevertheless, based in is going to force them to get divorced. We're not worried about laws on the children because the fact is she's also to the boyle midaraisa. On the other hand, then the implication would be that if there were no edim, Then we wouldn't have forced them to get divorced in the first place. So now if she married this other guy, then we're not going to force them to get divorced either. So that's one answer, and then we'll continue in the Gemara tomorrow with another possible answer of what Rav is talking about. One thing, by the way, I forgot to mention before when we were talking about that Ein Makablam Gerim Lo Bimei David Lo Bimei Shloimei. So first of all, so as far as the Gerim that, that joined the Jewish people later, so again, Tosfos says, like we said before, Me'atzman, this Gairu, they became Gerim on their own, which some of them approach again, doesn't mean on their own. A person can't become a Gerim on his own. It means like with ad hoc Bate Dinim, who maybe didn't know this particular halacha. But Tosfos also mentions the interesting point that we have examples in the Gemara of people who wanted to become Gerim for no good reasons. For example, you have all the famous stories with Shammai and Hillel. You have the guy who wants to become a Ger on condition that I become a Kohen Gadol, for example. So how could Hillel be Megayer such a person based on what we're saying in the Gemara over here? So Tosfos answers over here, and they say basically the same thing. In the Sefer Shabbos, where that story is told, that Hillel knew that eventually Hillel knew for a fact that eventually he's going to be able to convince him to do it L'shem Shemayim. As in fact, in the story over there where he shows him that you can't, that you, a Ger, are never going to be able to become a Kohen Gadol anyway, so now the guy changes his motivation, and now he wants to go ahead with the Gerus for sincere reasons. So that would be allowed, but what we're saying in the Gemara over here is if we don't know that, then we shouldn't accept them where there's any reason to suspect that their motivation is not sincere, which is why we have nowadays, when a person becomes a ger, they go through, it takes a long time for Beis Din to accept them, because it's true that nowadays we're not yet in the times of Mashiach. On the other hand, we are, on the whole, we Jewish people are a lot better off than we were in prior times, so therefore there's a concern, especially a lot of times there can be a concern that they're doing it in order to marry a Yid, and therefore Beis Din has to try and ferret that out very carefully. Okay, shukriya everyone.